Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. YouTube, hi, hello. Nikias will reveal once again his two favorite comments from last week's episode later in the podcast. Hit the like button, subscribe, and get those comments in. See if you can win a Dunker prize from Nikias Duncan, aka him acknowledging you. But other than that, Dunker Nation, let's ride. It's time to hoop it up.
All right, it is time to hoop it up indeed. We will get into some comments later in the show. As Steve said, thank y'all for rocking with us. We had some more NBA Cup action. We have a really fun matchup in the finals. We're recording on a Monday, so by the time you see slash listen to this, it will be Tuesday, which means it will be finals night or finals day between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Milwaukee Bucks. But before we get to our preview of that one, talk a little bit about how we got there. We will start out in the East. The Milwaukee Bucks defeating the Atlanta Hawks 114-109 in this one. Giannis with a near triple-double with 32-14-9. Also blocked four shots. Dame with 25-6-7. Bobby Portis, not quite the loud performance that we saw in the last game, but 10 points, 9 boards, and a block off the bench. 35-10 for Trey, 15-10 for Jalen Johnson, 15-7 off the bench for DeAndre Hunter. Just get you some box score numbers out there. I think for me, I was most impressed with Milwaukee's defense. I think Giannis did a tremendous job of setting the tone early in this game. It was a quick 7-0 surge for the Milwaukee Bucks in this one. And the Hawks tried to poke some things in pick and roll. And Giannis mostly was not having it. Let's see what happens with Trey and Jalen Johnson in pick and roll. If it's going to be a switch, can we poke around with that? If we try to attack early pick and roll, see if we can get Giannis going. There was one to go with Giannis and Brook Lopez defending the action. Brook kind of up there. You get two on the ball briefly. Giannis gets the deflection anyway. And so from that moment on, it's like, okay, this might be a different ball game for the Atlanta Hawks. Because coming in, you know Brook's going to be in a drop. You would assume that Giannis is going to be in a drop, or at least I did, but we saw more switching than at least I anticipated with Giannis in that game. But there could be pockets for Trae Young to attack. And if Trae's able to lead the dance, get the floater going, get some free throws, get the pull-up three going, would that open things up for everyone else with the Hawks? Could that put the Bucks in a tough position? And for the first half, at least, the Hawks did make their comeback midway through the first. But it didn't feel like they were able to consistently get going. It didn't feel like a very loud Trey start. He was getting to the rim, didn't get layups to go, didn't get floaters to go. And I was intrigued by how Milwaukee was defending Trey. And within that lens, like what kind of help they were showing or what help they wouldn't show. Like it was a lot of two-on-two in pick and roll and being selective about when they were sending their help and who they were helping off of. Like there was a possession, I want to say early in the second quarter, ends in a Chris Middleton steal. But it's an early offense, Trey, Clint Capella pick and roll. Trey rejects the screen. You don't really see help. At least not yet. Then Chris Middleton sinks in from the corner, tells Torrey Prince, hey, I think this ball's going to the corner. You take this. I'm going to slide up to Dyson Daniels. So as the ball's in the air, Torrey Prince basically meets the guy on the catch. Swing to Dyson Daniels. Dyson Daniels tries to attack Chris Middleton. He loses the ball. It's a turnover. It's like, okay, Milwaukee's here. And as long as they can get stops, you now get the freight train that is Giannis in transition. You now can hit the ball, you know, flip the ball ahead early to Dame and let him attack with some drives, or he can get into some of the pull-ups, or you just flow into early pick and roll. And if Atlanta isn't set, the collective length that we've talked about with them, it doesn't pop to the same degree. And so I felt like Milwaukee, the half-court offense was a little bit shakier than the transition offense was. We could talk a little bit about that later. But in general, I think the defense really set the tone for them. And I think if that is going to be a foundation for them, they have enough with what they have with Giannis and Dame as individual talents. We've talked about throughout this season, the chemistry they've continued to build when used in action together. It's a formula for a really tough team to beat. So I think I start with the defense. Andre Jackson Jr., he was an X factor for me. Like, hey, this can't be a foul trouble game for you. It wasn't an A-plus effort, but was solid enough. But the front court was really good. Brook challenged a whole lot of stuff at the rim. Giannis, again, was fantastic in space at the rim. The double block between Giannis and Brook, or at least it looked like one, late in that fourth quarter to seal it, felt like the loudest play of the evening. But it was just a lot of possessions like that to where we are dictating where you can attack, where you can shoot from, the shot profile stuff, we can get to that a little bit later, was interesting in this game. Hat tilt for me, for Milwaukee's defense.
I mean, I think for Milwaukee overall, Giannis set the tone on both ends of the floor. I thought he was incredible the entire game. I think to touch on your defense point, this is the payoff for the Bucks and the work they put in as far as having a stronger base and being able to do more things, feeling comfortable switching more people and more actions. Kind of just made it tough for the Hawks to necessarily hone in on one thing, being able to poke around and play games. So you mentioned sometimes Trae Young was able to get downhill. Sometimes, hey, if this corner is filled, this side is filled, here's Chris Middleton shading over, showing some help. Now we're sticking it in the drop, but there's a help here. Are you going to stay space? Are you going to cut? Just doing little things to kind of poke at the Hawks. Well, I thought maintained and stayed in control of their game for the most part, but Milwaukee's defense just came up and rose up. Second quarter held them to 21 points. Fourth quarter held them to 19 points. Mm-hmm. I think it was interesting to see, hey, the work Giannis did one-on-one against Jalen Johnson at times. The times when Giannis switched on Trae Young, I was like, oh, that's on the table today. Okay, that's intriguing. And again, I think it can get lost on how good Giannis is on both ends of the floor. For me, it's not that Giannis is a bad defender. I think you just know how good of a defender he could be. And if he was that consistently, the Bucks defense would probably look a lot different. That's always been my opinion. And he probably saw pieces of that in this game as a team. I thought they did a good job being locked in. They got back in transition. They were communicating. They sustained that defense past the first action, you know, and the Hawks wanted to put certain people in action and the Bucks were like, fine, we'll switch that. And if we need late help, we'll get late help. Other than that, we'll recover. I thought Milwaukee's offense, the ball movement was pretty good. Once they got the Hawks in rotation, there were a lot of possessions where they just kept attacking. They kept moving it. Felt like they were really in control of what they wanted to do. A lot of empty side actions that worked out for them, whether it was Giannis and Middleton, Giannis and Dame, and just kind of poking at the Hawks, the mismatches, the help they showed, and finding the open person. Felt like there were a bunch of possessions where the Hawks committed to a Bucks player, either on the roll or on a drive, and Milwaukee was like, well, I'll just kick it if you're that open.
Yeah.
And then they just kept doing that over and over again. But just the complimentary actions between their players, you know, not just using Dame and Giannis together in pick and roll. That two-man game has grown very well. But also, hey, slice Giannis into the post. You're scared of that. Here's a stagger for Damian Lillard. Oh, no. They're starting to catch the rhythm of what they can be. And so I think that's probably the most fun part of it for me. I think Atlanta was a good performance. You walk away with some lessons on what you may have to do in some of the bigger games. But I think the Bucks just went ahead and took this one.
Yeah, it was a really good run. And just quickly on the Atlanta offense front, per Cleaning the Glass, a 99 offensive rating, which is well below where you want to be offensively, well below the worst offense in the league, an 88.9 offensive rating in the half court for the Atlanta Hawks. To be fair, Milwaukee's half court offense, their number itself was better than Atlanta's, but not very good overall. But to Steve's point, you saw a lot of the good process things. And ultimately, when your defense is that good, it gives you a little bit of wiggle room. And so you mentioned some of the move, slicing Giannis into the post. You can go empty side. Like, just the simple, let's give Giannis the ball. Dame is one pass away. Chris Middleton is two passes away. Do you want to send help? And if so, where are you sending this from? It just puts you in such a tough position as a defense to deal with. And then as for the shot profile stuff I tossed out earlier, 23 attempts at the rim for Atlanta, only converted 61% of those, below their average. 26 short mid-range or floater area shots for them. They shot 27% of those. So as you talk about, again, the importance of Trey's floater in general, and shout out to Stefano who put out the test, like, hey, is this a lob or is this a floater? Incredibly fun mental exercise. It really gives you insight into how good Trae Young is and how difficult he is to deal with when he's coming downhill. But either way, just the importance of that shot. If he doesn't have it, if you're Milwaukee, okay, we can just stop. We can just stay in this base then. Like, fine, keep taking those shots. And ultimately, you're not generating more fruitful ones. If you can't toss this lob because it's tough to toss a lob over Brook Lopez, and depending on where Giannis is, you have to deal with both of them. And if the kicks are two players that we're ultimately comfortable with, it's fine. And then you get into like the rim share and the three share. Both teams took around 30% of their shots at the rim. 46% three-point rate for Milwaukee, 27 for Atlanta. They didn't get a lot of threes up. They also didn't make a ton. And I think just how selective Milwaukee was helped dictate that. And again, gives them a little bit more wiggle room on a night where they didn't set the Nets on fire themselves. So just a quick hat tip to the Milwaukee Bucks on that front. Did you have any closing Bucks-Hawks thoughts before we move?
No. Oh, your pick to win the NBA Cup did not make it to the finals.
Yep. I too held the L as the Atlanta Hawks did, but heck of a run for them, though. It's been a quality season for them overall. Excited to see what lessons they take from this, but I will be holding the L. Shout out to the Milwaukee Bucks. We will see them in the final against the Oklahoma City Thunder, who knocked off the Houston Rockets 111-96 in the ABC showcase. 32-8-6 for Shea. Also had 5 steals and a block. Jalen Williams with 25-5. Isaiah Hartenstein with 21-8. For the Houston Rockets, 13-11 for Alperen Şengün. Not the most efficient night for him. Amen Thompson with 19.7 boards and 3 steals off the bench. Tari Eason also with 12 points and a block off the bench. And sticking with the theme of defense, Houston didn't have a good time dealing with this OKC defense. And it was interesting from like an analysis standpoint, but also kind of funny watching how quickly OKC decided, actually, we are just going to send 2 to Alperen Şengün. Let's see what everyone else does. I think the first couple of post touches he got, just Şengün against Hardenstein, like, hey, just do your best. Like, let's see what happens here. And I think on that third one, here's Jalen Williams. Like, actually, if I'm one pass away, I probably can afford to send a little help. So it's late help for him. And then the next touch Alperen Şengün gets, it is just a flat-out double. And from there, very reductive, but you just kind of need your players to knock down shots. Fred VanVleet flat-out didn't have it. Jalen Green flat-out didn't have it. Dylan Brooks made some timely ones, but ultimately they couldn't lean on him to a heavy degree. And so with Şengün dealing with the size that he had to deal with and the speed they had to deal with when OKC sent extra help, if the pull-ups weren't falling, it was just going to be tough sledding for the Houston Rockets. And for OKC, it was a mix of let's go guard, guard, screen. Let's poke at some stuff. Let's attack early. Let's get downhill. Let's see what Şengün does. Let's put him in action and see what we can get. And I think Shea, particularly in the second half, because it was a slow start for him. I think Dylan Brooks did a really good job. I mean, Thompson, the rare times he got him, did a solid job. Third quarter comes around and Shea just has the mix of drives and pull-ups going. And now I'm getting you up in there and I'm getting to the free throw line too. Then you get the wave from OKC. But I, once again, like similar to the Milwaukee Bucks, I do just start with their defense. Like the speed just popped for me. The rotations popped for me. The one thing that I kind of raised my brow on in this game, we talked through it a little bit in the watch party. I was keeping an eye on Hartenstein in the drop because it feels like he's not back to 100% yet in terms of like lateral sliding. And so I was kind of keeping an eye on him in the drop. But even with that, if he's off kilter, here's Jalen Williams, who can just also come down the baseline and help and pick up stuff, and Hartenstein can flow elsewhere, or he can provide his own late contest on shots if someone else picks it up. That's the benefit of having the rangy defenders that OKC has. They can provide the extra layer of help whenever they feel like they need to. And so even that was like, okay, I see it, but I don't think it matters in this particular matchup because they can just provide the help elsewhere. But I think that's where I start at the very least. What popped for you in this OKC Houston matchup?
Everything. All you people out there said there's no defense in the NBA. It was 20-18 out of the first quarter. 42-41. Real hoop. Okay, now that I've gotten that out of the way. I think one of the things for me is the Thunder's defense. I really appreciated the work they put in this game. And it was fun to kind of watch both defenses kind of impose their will early on. You know, Houston kind of had the game at their tempo. Hey, we're methodical in the half court. We might not have all the openings, but you're not scoring as well. Mm-hmm. But that's been the benefit for Houston in these matchups sometimes where, okay, their defense is going to give their offense wiggle room. And it did so until the Oklahoma City Thunder went in there at halftime. And my dad and I was like, hey, we've got to compete a little bit more against physicality. Can't just come down to who makes the most shots, mm-hmm. Which was a good quote if you watched it on TV. I misquoted it, but you got the general gist. Their offense took off. Their defense also held firm, and that's where it makes it tough. I think with Oklahoma City, their team defense, their rotations, you got to watch it. You got to appreciate it. It's tough for a team to hold an advantage against Oklahoma City when they're really, really humming because they just got versatility, you know, scheme-wise. If you have concerns about Hartenstein to drop, here's the tricky part. You don't necessarily know what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. He can be at the level and start to drop back. If a guard gets hit and he's supposed to be at the level, we'll just make that a switch. And then, okay, you think it's a switch. Here comes that guard to double and kick Hartenstein out of the matchup. So now, mm-hmm. whatever advantage you thought you had, not there anymore. Looks like it's going to be two on the ball. Okay, cool. We can hit the pop. Oh, they rotated to the pop. And now Hartenstein is getting back into the paint. What do we do? So I think that was some of the second half adventure for Houston. One, having to make shots, but two, having to work to make decisions. And I think Oklahoma City did a good job of, okay, the movement, we're going to try and take something off the table for you. And now put you in a position where you have to score the basketball as opposed to being able to go back and forth. You know, I think for Houston, it gets interesting. On a night where Şengün doesn't necessarily have it offensively and your guards need to make specific shots, that's where the growth is going to come for them in the half court, because that's what you're going to have to do. I think sometimes a lot of the angst for Rockets fans, who will probably yell at me anyways, I don't know if it's necessarily the players you have. You just see a team that's very good that needs this specific thing, and those guys aren't doing it all the time. But Jalen Green hunts the pull-ups. They're just not going in. Freddie's going to hunt the pull-ups. Some nights they just don't go in. That's part of your makeup right now. This is part of this year for you. You are in where the Thunder were last year. We have found something. How far can it take us? Mm-hmm. So don't lose sight of that. But I think OKC, for the most part, I thought it was a balanced offensive effort, honestly. Yeah, they had the driving kick that got Houston to fly around, but you also had some pick and roll plays. You had some movement. Shea and Jalen Williams in that fourth quarter, kind of rude what they did. So that's what kind of just makes it tough when this team keeps playing. Like, they're very rarely they get down on themselves. You have to beat them over a course of 48 minutes. And so that's the impressive part for me. The Thunder felt like they had composure in this one over the course of the whole game.
Yeah, that's good stuff there. And just quickly on the half court battle is, you know, two elite defenses in this matchup, but a 103.4 offensive rating in the half court for OKC, a solid number. A 63 offensive rating in the half court for the Houston Rockets, which, again, some of that is just we have generated an open three. We did not get it to go. Or here's a pull up against drop. We didn't get it to go. And so you take some of the solid process, unfortunate result. But just for the number itself, that is stark for the Houston Rockets.
Tony?
You know what? That's a good shot. Much like the Houston Rockets took, but did not make enough in this particular basketball game. So OKC rolls on.
Get it? Because they're hitting the iron, man.
Ah, darn. A layered shot from Steve Jones. You know what? I'll let you have that one. That's pretty good. That's good work right there. But that does lead us into preview time, as we have the Thunder and we have the Bucks. This is a matchup that I am both very excited for, and I've also been in a headlock on. I think, very broadly speaking, like, I do think the Thunder are a better basketball team, and they should win this basketball game. Like, we'll get into the official predictions a little bit later in the segment. But Milwaukee's defense perking up like this, and Giannis in particular perking up like this, I think it's fair to say you walk into this game, like, Giannis should just be the best player on the court. And, like, anytime you enter a scenario like that, it becomes more of a toss-up than you may anticipate. But I think about how Milwaukee defended Atlanta. These two teams haven't played yet in the regular season, but going back to their matchups last year, in particular going to the March matchup where Shea was available, Jalen was available. You had Dame, Giannis, and Chris in that one. So I wanted to get as close of, like, this matchup as I could. Naturally, the roster's a difference from last year, but it was a similar bit with Milwaukee defensively. Oh, you want to hunt Dame and pick and roll, and boy, did OKC do that a lot. Fine. Here's a switch. We're going to give Shea a dribble or two. Once he takes that third dribble and he's getting close to the rim, now here's Brook Lopez. Now here's Giannis, depending on where he is. And because of some of the players that OKC had on the floor, we don't care if your kick is going to insert player here. It was a kind of a layered shot. Like, we don't really trust these shooters. Also, Shea, as you have grown as a playmaker, let's see what you do about this timing on this help. We're not showing the bodies early so you can take a dribble and then just make the kick to the corner. We're going to stay home, make you think you got space. As you go into your move and you start your gather, now we're sending this help. And we're also flowing to the corner. Can you make this live kick? Can you do it over and over and over and over and over again? And so, like, you look at the specific drive numbers for Shea, like, the Shea drive possessions were pretty productive. But over the course of the game, especially if those threes don't go down, okay, what else are we getting exactly? And ultimately, if you are missing shots and now Giannis is the one grabbing the board, or Giannis is leaking out because he's defending someone that was on the wing, it's a quick hit ahead to Giannis. And oh no, we can't load up our defense like that. So I do find myself intrigued by how different this is going to look for OKC. Because even going back to that matchup, it was Chet spaced at the five. In the corner, in the opposite wing sometimes. And there was some, like, there was one in particular off the top of my head. Like, Chet was spaced on the left wing. Brook Lopez had him. Brook Lopez comes with late help. It's like, okay, they're leaving Chet. And this was a year that he shot well. I think at that point of the season, we started to see some of the three-point dippage we were talking about down the pod. But it's like, okay, they're willing to do that. With Isaiah Hartenstein in, who obviously a very good player, could be used as a hub, et cetera, where is Isaiah Hartenstein going to be spaced in this game? Is he going to be in the dunker? Are they going to space him on the perimeter? If so, like, what does that do for Milwaukee's help? What does that do for the driving lanes for OKC? There are counters built in. How quickly does OKC get to him? Like, by, it just gets a lot of fun for me.
Let me slow the Nekias train down real quick.
Okay. My fault, OG.
No. All these things you're describing about Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. What other team does that type of stuff and typically does it better against Oklahoma City?
The Dallas Mavericks.
How did Oklahoma City look against the Dallas Mavericks?
Well, they look pretty good.
So this is not going to be something the Thunder have not seen. There are some different components. Brook's very good at the rim. You have different pieces. But the pressure is going to be on Milwaukee to hit these rotations. And as good as their activity was against Atlanta, there's a difference here. One, it's a lot easier to have your rotations built in and pick and roll and handoffs than drive and kick. Mm-hmm. Two, they're going to have to contain the ball over and over and over again. So your rotations, when there's a dribble drive, can be trickier. If you get over help, this is a team that will punish you by, again, driving and kicking, forcing you to close out. Can they sustain that defense? This is going to be a test of that base, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The other constant for the Milwaukee Bucks, outside of like Brook rim protection and Giannis being insane, guard screens have given them issues over the history of time. Mm-hmm. And while the switching was good against Atlanta, this is a Thunder team that will set guard screens. If they go small and you want to put a big Bobby Portis on, you know, Alex Crusoe or insert wing here, they will also screen. So they've got to be really clean at the first level over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're going to see the real test for Milwaukee's defense. Can they handle the Thunder hitting them over and over again? And then on the other end, I have some intrigue. The Thunder are going to have to defend. Got to deal with Giannis. Are you going to double? How often are you going to double? Are your double teams going to put you in a tough spot where now you're in rotation that maybe you didn't expect to be in all night? How do you balance that with a team defense that's usually pretty good when you're locked in? You know, is this a Caruso shows us why he's so valuable for us type game? Mm-hmm. Is this a Hartenstein continues to show his value type game? How do they want to handle Dame in pick and roll? Are they going to put two on the ball? Are they going to be able to hit the blend where it looks like two on the ball, we get back, or we're going to drop, we're going to do that? I think Dame is going to have to hit the drive button and establish those. I think he's done a good job this year, but he has to hit the drives in this game. And Milwaukee has to have the mindset to keep moving the ball. Keep moving the ball. Mm-hmm. Keep pressure on the Thunder defense. They will fly around, but can you flip that on their head? You know, I don't think you want to be, even though you have the star power, I don't know you want to be as methodical as Houston ended up having to be. So can you kind of keep your tempo up? This is a team that will walk the ball up, but, you know, will it be jazz music stops or you keep the pressure on?
Yeah. I like that. I think related to, let's we'll go OKC offense first. As you've alluded to, the constant pressure they can put, not just on Milwaukee, but on defenses at large, and them inverting actions. Like, one of the questions that I had was, how is Milwaukee going to attempt to match up? And I kind of start with, where are they putting Giannis in this game? Because naturally, we saw him on Jalen Johnson in the Hawks game. Do you just give him the Jalen Williams matchup? Or, because I would imagine Andre is just going to get the Shea assignment to start. Do you go Taurean on Jalen? Let's put Giannis on Kaysen or Lu Dort. Probably Lu Dort. I would imagine Dame gets Kaysen Wallace. Let's do that so we can have Giannis's extra help.
Depends on each what strategy you want to do. You want Giannis to help her, or do you want Giannis involved? If Giannis is going to be someone who switches, does it matter as much in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that to me will tell the story. How active do they want Giannis to be? If he's going to be as locked in as he was against Atlanta, then hey, give the J-Dub matchup. Take the challenge. Mm-hmm. Someone's got to turn. You got to turn the water off one of those two, mm-hmm. or at least make it a drip. So we'll see if Milwaukee comes right out from the gate saying, let's go, or slow burn.
Got you. And I think even related to that, like one thing that stood out in that Dallas series for the OKC last year is Shea got a lot of buckets. It was not a consistent effort for Jalen Williams. And so to your point about we got to turn the water off somewhere, maybe that gives more credence to Giannis. You have Jalen Williams. This is just yours. If there's a Shea Jalen pick and roll, we're just going to switch that because duh. But otherwise, we need to make sure that both of y'all aren't going off. If we could take Jalen away, maybe we can deal with, as much as we can anyway, we can deal with Shea in isolation. Let's limit some of this. And your double question for OKC versus Milwaukee's offense, like I think it's an interesting one as well. I think Milwaukee has also been a team that is historically willing to, we'll put a guard in the dunker. We can stress some of this out. We can make you make some tough decisions. And in general, like they do have willing movers off the ball. Like Dame's a good relocator. If they have a one pass away, do you really want to send a double from there? Andre Jackson Jr., like the shooting woes are what they are. Very willing cutter and off-ball screener on top of that. So it's not like you can just kind of build in, if we help off of him, we just shade here to make sure he doesn't cut, because he's also willing to set those pin ins too. And if Milwaukee's able to move the ball, they'll be able to generate some more looks. So to your point about, hey, we might be in a different type of rotation now, that is a button that Milwaukee can press. It's up to them to do it, obviously. But like, this is not something that they haven't done before, which just adds to the overall intrigue for me. The guard screening point is also a good one. Ooh, this is going to be a big Bobby game.
A big who?
Bob Port. No, shout out Bobby Portis. It's going to have to be a big Bobby Portis game.
In what sense?
Stabilizing things when Giannis or Dame is off the floor, but defensively, he's going to have to hold up. If he isn't able to hold up, that does kind of pigeonhole Milwaukee a little bit in terms of their lineup versatility. So that can indeed get dicey. So worth keeping an eye on there. So I'll give you another hat tip on that front. When OKC goes like super small, it's really where the intrigue rises up for me with Milwaukee. Like, how are they going to match up? And with OKC going small, because we have seen games, the Dallas matchup earlier in the regular season, to where y'all are small, you still have players on the court that we're okay with helping off of / leaving open. And if we still have an element of size, if we are willing to switch, on the other end, we're just going to beat you up on the glass. Does this become, even if Milwaukee isn't efficient overall, we get extra chances and we just get you in the bonus? Because while OKC flies around defensively and they force an ungodly amount of turnovers, which is why they have been not just the best defense in the league, they have been historically good so far this year. The ball security's there. Or if you're just giving up a bunch of extra chances, like it does weigh on you. It can weigh on you. And this is just a one-off. Like in a series, maybe I'm less concerned, but like this could just be a game where the ball bounces the other way. You get a deflection, Milwaukee recovers anyway. Now it's another drive. Now it's a dump off. Now it's two free throws. Like those many swings could make things incredibly dicey for the Thunder as well. But no, this should be fun. Like I think going back to the Dame part, he's going to be in action a lot. He's going to have to hold up. He's got to do his best to hold up at the very least. It was honestly funny watching just how often, how consistently OKC said, hey, you bud, you come up here. Here's a screen. Here's a switch. Shea goes to work immediately. So what does that look like? That also goes into like the matchup thing for me with Milwaukee. Like, how do they want to do that? And conversely, how often is Hartenstein going to be used as like a direct screener to alleviate some of the like spacing / Milwaukee help point concerns? Because OKC is so comfortable going with their smaller pick and rolls, we'll go Spain with three guards, etc. Like, don't know. Like, it just kind of leaves Hartenstein kind of loitering around the paint. And, like, does that help Milwaukee's defense? Does it make it a little bit easier for them to establish their base if that's the case?
I mean, if you're concerned about Hartenstein's base, can they just kick it to him and then run more action?
They could, yeah. That's part of why you bring him into the fold if you're OKC.
I mean, it's just, I think it's more concepts. I mean, for me, I'm intrigued to see how much does Brooke do a late switch on Shea? How much they tap that button? You know, you talk about, it's interesting. You mentioned Bobby Portis has to hold up defensively. Damian Lillard has to hold up defensively. What about Chris Middleton, bud?
Huh? He also has to hold up. I tell you what. Because who isn't afraid to attack?
So do you believe in the Bucks defense in this matchup?
I believe in the concepts that they can hit. And the defense has just been good during cup play. And so that's why I said at the top, like, I think OKC is a better team. They will rightfully be favored. But OKC does, I mean, Milwaukee does indeed have a pathway. Like, we've seen enough through cup play, and even before we got here, OKC finding some things, I mean, Milwaukee finding some things defensively, feeling a little bit more solid. And that starts with what Giannis has been able to do. To your point, it has been much more consistent possession by possession effort for Giannis. And now if he can be a late switch guy, a pure switch guy, a I take the matchup guy, a drop guy, and also a weak side roamer guy, and you're getting like 95th percentile Giannis at all of those, even if you worry about, okay, is Dame going to hold up? Is Chris going to hold up? Like, what does Torian look like against this particular action? At the end of the day, we got Brooke and Giannis. And so any slippage, you have to finish over those guys. Or if you are hesitant at all, that gives us the beat we need to recover and make you do it over again. And I think within that context, it's why the matchup is so fun for me, because OKC, oh, that didn't work, we drive again. That didn't work, we drive again. It's just going to be punch counter punch in this matchup. And so I am just hoping, like, I don't want any like injury shenanigans or anything like that. If everyone's fully ready to go, this is going to be, I'm ready for this matchup.
The Bucks have found trust. The Thunder know if they defend, they can beat everyone. That'll be the fun of it. And each side has closers who can make it shift at any point in time. If it's a Giannis game, a Dame game, a Shea game, a J-Dub game, it should be fun to watch. Now, again, if the Bucks defense doesn't show up, Thunder can run them out the gym. Bucks can, they're able to get some stops. You have that start you had against Houston, against Milwaukee. That could be a 9-0 run. I'm fascinated to see what it looks like. Who's your pick?
I am going to roll with OKC in this one. I think this comes down to late game execution, though. I think this is actually going to be a legit clutch time battle. I want that as well as a basketball fan, but like, I do think Milwaukee's going to be ready to go defensively. It's going to be a close one, but I go OKC close. Who do you have in this one?
Nikas, where are they playing it at?
In Las Vegas.
The Milwaukee who?
The Milwaukee Bucks.
It's my pick.
Okay. There we go. We got enough of a difference in the picks, but no, this is going to be a fantastic basketball matchup. I hope everyone is amped for this one. Can I make a very quick plea that probably doesn't need to be made, but I'll do so anyway?
Seems like we're here now, pal. So go ahead.
Fair enough. I will just say very quickly on the award front, as NBA Cup play naturally counts towards the regular season standings and the stats count, the quarterfinals, the semifinals count towards the regular season standings, the stats count. In the final, does not count towards the standings, does not count towards the regular season standings and stats and things. And so, let's not make this like MVP fodder if we can help it, because it quite literally is not going to factor in.
What?
We get to some of these showcases. You know how it goes with like MVP talk. It's like, well, this person beat this person. It's like, I just wanted to note that this is a game that quite literally does not count towards the regular season standings and per game numbers and thus not the regular season MVP award. We're going to be pedantic before we transition to the next segment.
I ain't gonna hold you. This is gaslighting. Bro, if I see Giannis cook tomorrow and he switches on Shea and guards Shea well, I'm not forgetting that.
Wait, so how's that gaslighting?
Hey, this thing you about to see, it don't really count for the regular season. So don't worry about it.
It literally doesn't.
It still counts. It's still a game of basketball.
It is. It happened. I'm saying, like, that's not a, you know. The hashtag factoring in is all I am referring to. But either way. Hey, I popped you. That's all that matters. There we go.
Did not. I'm very upset, actually.
Oh, no.
What's the next part of the show?
Okay. Well, let's transition into transaction talk. So Yay. We continue to make Steve happy. Okay. But no, in all seriousness, we did have a deal. We've had a couple, but we'll start with the bigger one. The Golden State Warriors set to acquire Dennis Schroeder and a 2025 second round pick from the Miami Heat. From the Brooklyn Nets, the Nets getting DeAnthony Melton, who is currently out for the season, Reese Beekman, a 2026 and 2028 second round pick, and a 2029 second round pick. Dennis Schroeder in Golden State. Steve, how do you feel about the fit with Dennis in Golden State?
I mean, here's the thing. Before we get to the fit, you got to look at overall what the Warriors needed. And so I don't want to do the strength in numbers bit. But the Warriors' strong start, obviously they had injuries, but the Warriors' strong start was really pushed by their bench. And so it was one of my favorite stats to look at early in the season. So overall this year, the bench has scored 40 or more in 15 games this season, I believe. Warriors are 11-4 when that happens. To start the year, the Warriors scored at least 40 points off the bench in 11 of their first 12 games.
That'll do.
They've done it 5 times since.
Ah, that will not do.
So this is where we have to find pieces that are going to help elevate us off the bench. And one piece that's going to help you score the basketball more times than not is Dennis Schroeder. Like him or not, he's going to get in the paint. He's going to put the ball in the basket. You might try and put the ball in the basket too much than more times than you would want to, but he's going to give you a lift. He's going to give you a pump, give you a pop, give you a punch for a team that is still trying to figure out what's our starting lineup. We're moving things around from night to night. But you look at their bench right now, it's currently constructed, right? Mm-hmm. GP2, defense. Trace can roll, but defense. It's Lindy Waters shooting threes. And then it's Pods. So if you have shooting concerns, it's not like Pods is shooting that much better than Dennis Schroeder from three this year.
I would wager he's... So, you know, like the pod season, I don't want to cut you off. The pod season's kind of making me sad.
Why?
Because I felt like he got off to a solid start. Like I talked about the defense, the ball pressure, but like some of the inside the arc craft was intriguing to me at the very least. It's like, okay, jumper isn't quite there, but I would imagine that bounces back around. And with some of the growth we're seeing inside the arc, okay, it's going to be fine. If the floaters also aren't going to go down anymore, and the threes aren't going to fall, as he is shooting a pristine 25% from three this season. Dennis Schroeder flirting with a career high, around 39% from three right now. It was good defense. It wasn't elite defense for Pods. It's just like, okay, where does this leave him if this is what you're getting from him offensively? Like, teams are becoming more audacious with helping off of him. You can still put the ball in his hands, feel like a decent decision is going to be made more often than not, but like, that's not enough to bend defenses yet. And so, like, just seeing how it's kind of slid since the start has been a little sad for me. Not that he can't recapture the form or anything like that, but it's been a rough stretch.
I hate to remind y'all, it's not linear. The stuff is not linear. You don't just all of a sudden unlock and become this every single night. You got to do it every night. And a lot of teams around the league, they get a smell. Ooh, that little doubt over there? Let's test it. Let's see it. Now you look up one day, you feeling good about yourself. You're getting a hell no when you shoot a floater from the opposing bench.
Yeah, that's...
Got to work through it. You got to work through it. You got to keep your confidence. You got to push through it. So
KG wasn't even over there. That's the wild part.
So, I think this, as much of it as it's to help the bench, might also be to help him get going. So instead of, hey, you got to operate all this, play, go play. Because Dennis Schroeder's going to go play. So instead of overthinking and thinking you got to play make or be worrying about spacing and thinking about your drive, thinking about your shot, play next to that guy. Because if you don't, he's going to play. He's going to get downhill. He's going to push in transition. He's going to make things move. So now can we get more combinations and get more of a pop to put some things together in second unit? So I think that's the biggest thing that Dennis Schroeder's going to give them. I'm very intrigued to see how the drives help. I'm very intrigued to see how Steve Kerr wants to use him. Mm-hmm. If this pushes a little bit more pick and roll, or if he's able. I mean, it's not like Dennis Schroeder can't work in movement. Like he wasn't in Atlanta or anything like that. But I mean, they need some pop right now. They need some pop. They need some playmaking. They need to kind of push this thing back in the right direction.
Yeah. I think to bounce off of that quickly, like I like what Draymond said about Dennis Schroeder, where to paraphrase, it's like, hey, we need someone that does stuff that we don't have right now. Like we have all the movement stuff and Steph has his own package, et cetera, et cetera. Adding Dennis Schroeder to the room where you could just hand him the ball and just generate a paint touch whenever, like we don't have to get into the high splits. We don't have to get into the staggers and all the fun stuff. Hey, generate a paint touch, make the defense rotate or finish if they don't. That should just add inherent value to the Golden State attack, which, as I talk about again, the hot start that they had, you know, we had the full-blown Warriors segment early in the year. They were top 10 in offense and defense, or flirting with top 10 in offense, and they were certainly elite defensively. That offense has not been the same production-wise since the hot start. So does Dennis Schroeder save their offense? Like, no, I don't think he does. He certainly helps just by virtue of the drives. It also helps that, as we alluded to a little bit earlier, he's just been shooting the leather off the ball to start the year. Catch and shoot. I'm running pick and roll. You're going under because you don't believe I can shoot. I'm just going to stop right here and take this shot. What are you going to do about it? And something that you talked about a bunch. You get an under. Here's a rescreen. Now you don't know what's coming. Is he setting up for this pull-up, or is this just a hesitation for him to actually use the screen and now get all the way downhill? And now you're in a bind because he's still one of the fastest players in the league. And I think about what that can mean in the lineups when he's on the floor with Steph. You now have the combination, at least in theory, the combination of all the off-ball things that we already do with Steph. Bring it up, toss it ahead to Draymond. I'm going to the corner. I'm going to lift up over something, go to the other side, whatever. To where if you deny that, the ball can just be swung to Dennis Schroeder. And since you're already out of position, his only job is to beat the guy in front of him. And now he's just at the rim. And if you send late help, oh no, that might be a catch and shoot opportunity for Stephen Curry or someone else that can keep the chain going. Like, I am excited about the offensive fit. The defensive fit intrigues me because, as I've talked about with the Nets earlier this year, like Dennis has been part of some of the full court pressure fun with Brooklyn, or I guess was at this point. And so as Golden State has been a team that's ramped that up as well, or just in general doesn't mind extending their pressure, Dennis can slot into that. My only real question becomes, how small is Golden State going to be sometimes? Especially if you were going with Dennis and Steph together. Like, can they scrounge up enough size around those two? Not that either of them are bad. Again, Dennis can fit and can pressure the ball. And Steph, teams will put him in action, but he is a strong guard and generally just knows how to scram out when they do that. So, like, I'm not worried about them individually. But that is a small backcourt. And so against certain matchups, I just wonder what that's going to look like. But I'm just going to have to wait for the sample size to see how they deal with that. But Dennis should slide in fine defensively. Offensively, he's going to add that punch. If the shooting continues, then that's incredibly valuable. If it doesn't, I think some of the opponent cross-matching can get kind of fun when facing Golden State. But either way, if he can get to the rim that way and can just make the basic reads when he gets downhill as a passer, like that's kind of all you need. And to your point, if you do get pods back going or something, like there's always the world where you can just shift Dennis to the bench or keep him on the bench. And now he just spearheads that. And how many second unit guards can deal with Dennis Schroeder? Like one or two of them are currently employed by Golden State as far as potential answers go. So I really like the move. I'd say very quickly, like I do just feel for DeAnthony Melton. I felt was playing well. I just want him to have a consistent build of health. going back to like the Philly run and stuff like that. That is just a good player. And you could see early on like how he would slot in to this Golden State system on both ends of the floor. Good shooter, willing cutter, willing screener. Just tenacious at the point of attack defensively, just slots into all of that. So like him just kind of being salary for this deal, like just thinks as a basketball fan, I want him to get right. But no, this seems like a thumbs up for me for Golden State. And then being able to do that without having to, they didn't have to toss anyone else in. It was like Melton plus Moses Moody, or I think there was the report, I struggle to remember who it was exactly, but the reporting that it could have been Dennis Schroeder plus Cam Johnson if they were willing to toss in Jonathan Kuminga, and ultimately didn't do that. Like the fact you're able to bring Schroeder in and can help on both ends of the floor without giving up anything else. And these are second round picks that are tossing out in this deal. It does set them up to do something else if that, you know, the opportunity arises. Actually, quickly, how do you feel about them as a Brandon Ingram team? Or is that too different?
Who?
Golden State.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay.
I'd be intrigued because I like Brandon Ingram's game. I think his shot making would help. I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay.
Also, very much, well, you can't play for us this year, but he can.
Yeah.
And good old Brooklyn. You got some picks, huh?
Mm-hmm.
We'll take an expiring contract.
Let's get some picks. Let's get some...
rack up more room for next season.
Mm-hmm.
Talk soon.
There you go. Smart bit of business. Hey, let's get some picks. Let's get some draft rights. We'll take your salary. It's neat. And we weren't going to keep Dennis long-term anyway, so there you go. So good bit of business for both sides. Excited to see what the Dennis Schroeder experiment will look like in Golden State, or with Golden State, rather. And then the other trade that we got, a swap of 2031 second-round picks, and Thomas Bryant, you are an Indiana Pacer. Did play over the weekend, had 7 points and 2 boards in 11 minutes, made a three in that game. Steve, how do you feel about the Thomas Bryant fit in Indiana?
He's tall. They needed a tall person. I've done the Thomas Bryant thing 4 times in the last 5 seasons. I don't have another one in me. Somewhere in the archives. What do you think about it, man?
Check out episodes 136, 187, 211, 254, and 289 of the Dunkers. I don't know. I'm just tossing out numbers. We do have that many episodes, but I don't know. As far as the Thomas Bryant thing, so like jokes aside, they did need some size when you lose both Isaiah Jackson and James Wiseman. And then they recently waived Moses Brown. They just wanted some size in the room. So getting someone that can screen, that can win on the offensive glass, and again, made a three over the weekend, like can space the floor, at least theoretically, opens up some pick and pop opportunities for some of your guards. It makes sense as a depth piece. Like if you're not giving up anything of value, like it's a swap of 20, 31 seconds. You don't mess with your like real asset pool at all, and you get some insurance in the front court room. Like I can't be mad at that for Indiana. Like I think it's fine.
Fine, you roped me in. So here's the thing, right? So Thomas Bryant is going to give you a level of activity. How much you want it, how much help you have behind it, it's up to you. He will screen. He will roll. It works in Indiana. I don't think the burden for defense is as heavy there.
Mm-hmm.
And he might be rejuvenated by the offensive pace and rhythm and flow. And I mean, he will run. He's a rim runner. And a screener and a roller. So we'll see if that adds to Indiana's package. There, I did it.
I'm so proud of you. Thank you for indulging me on Thomas Bryant talk. General, get well soon to all of the injury participants since the last time we recorded. I don't want to spend too much time on the injury front. But okay. Steve, any players you would like to shout out?
Domantas Sabonis is averaging 23.7 points, 13.5 rebounds, and 4.8 assists in the month of December, shooting 62% from the field, 50% from three, 80% from the line. Put some respect on that man's name.
There we go. And the Kings are, what, 4-2 in their last 6 games? I need to do, like, the date filter for when Mike Brown just eviscerated the defense and the effort and see what the record was since then. or from the possession after possession after possession after possession after possession after possession clip. I'm not going to do that all 26 times, but shout out Mike Brown for just being a fun post-game listen and a good basketball coach. But, you know, more importantly, a fun listen post-game, of course. But shout out to Domantas Sabonis. Did you have anyone else you want to shout out?
Nope, the floor is yours, my friend.
All right, well, I will try to be as brief as I can. A quick shout out to Luka Doncic. As we talked about the Mavericks recently, they're on the win streak, etc. It was just as Luka was coming back. So it was more concept. This is what Luka can fit into, etc. Because we know how good he is. Since his return, the Mavericks are 5-1. He's averaging 30.8 points and torching the Nets from three in the process. 10.7 rebounds, 9.3 assists, 3.3 steals, and a shade under a block per game. He is coming off of a 45-11-13-3-2 game against the Golden State Warriors. And honestly, the dichotomy between that game and like Rockets Thunder the night before is just kind of funny as a concept. There was so many. You get to halftime. Like, we were making jokes in the watch party, which, hey, join us for our online Dunk Spot watch parties. You got League Pass. You watch a hoop, might as well watch it with us. But like, it was like 81-76 or something heading into the half. It's like, oh, wait, this just isn't the third quarter. This is halftime. This is kind of nuts because everyone's just hitting threes. Like, it didn't feel like a sloppy defense pickup game, whatever. Like, it was just good execution and premier shot making. Like, that just kind of happens. It takes me back to, what, a couple of years ago was that Clippers-Kings game that just went crazy. And I was like, you watch that game. Like, it wasn't like the defense was awful and there's 80 turnovers or anything like that. Nah, they're just hooping right now. This is good stuff. So it was more of those shades, but Luka was incredible. And it was a really complete effort for him. Like, the box score speaks for himself. You get another triple-double, which that is his third triple-double in the last four games. That seems pretty good. You take the five stocks. But defensively, Luka doing his job as a part of their defense. I am the low man. I'm going to make sure that I am in early. And if I have to close out, I'm going to do so in a disciplined fashion. And since I'm close to the basket anyway, if I'm the low man, I can now grab these rebounds and I can jet the ball ahead if you want a quick basket, or we can now just flow into some early pick and roll stuff. But more of the fun for me has been the off-ball movement and the way that they are utilizing Luka off the ball. There is still, as we've joked about, and you particularly have joked about, we're going to run a stagger for Luka, but then he's going to get the ball and just stop. And now it is pick and roll time. But there is like earnest off-ball movement happening for Luka Doncic. And I think in general, being able to mix that in with the Kyrie package, and as Spencer Dinwiddie in particular continues to play relatively well, you can have some times where both of those guys are just off the ball. And as a defense, it's like, okay, where exactly are we helping from, if at all? Because we may not want to purely defend this two-on-two, but if we help off either of those guys, that can be a kick to Luka, who is shooting well from three. That can be a kick to Kyrie, who is shooting, who can't just shoot the letter off the ball. Or it's a kick to them, and now it's just secondary action time, which Luka already does enough to tilt your defense when he enters the arena, much less if something has already happened and now he's catching the ball somewhat on the move. It's just incredibly tough. Like, one of the possessions we talked through in the watch party yesterday, recording on a Monday, it was some interesting screen navigation from Andrew Wiggins, first and foremost. But as a concept, Luka starts in the corner. It's a stagger. If you botch it at all, there's two on the ball. It's Klay Thompson on the wing instead of the corner. It's Daniel Gafford diving to the basket, and you have to choose between jumping with that incredibly tall, well, not incredibly tall, but that tall, incredibly athletic center, and potentially leaving Klay Thompson, or you stay with Klay, and it is just a lob for Daniel Gafford. And like, you get two on the ball, you get pressure from Draymond and Andrew Wiggins, and Luka just gets the pass off anyway because he's Luka freaking Doncic. Potts tries to help low at the rim. He jumps too early. Daniel Gafford's patient, gets a dunk. It's like, well, what do you, I don't know what you're supposed to do with that. And it's just really cool that Dallas is moving Luka around the board. In addition to, he can just cook whenever he has it going. And so really complete game for him on Sunday. Overall, he's been playing very well. Again, 5-1 since he's been back. And like, just pulling up some of the off-ball numbers from Second Spectrum. Actually coming off slightly fewer screens per 100 possessions than last year. It was 9.1 per 100 this year. 9.9, excuse me, last year. 1.15 points per possession on any trip featuring Luka coming off ball this year, which is a marked improvement from last season. So those actions popping more in addition to what Dallas has elsewhere, it's been really good stuff. So keep an eye on the Dallas Mavericks and Luka Doncic, who will absolutely factor into the MVP conversation once we have it. Quick hat tip, Tyrese Halliburton, very quietly, 20 points, 8 assists, 1.4 steals, and a block per game so far in December, shooting 38% from three on nearly 9 attempts. Steve, do you want a fun fact about Tyrese Halliburton?
Yeah.
Only OG Anunoby and Victor Wembanyama have blocked more three-pointers than Tyrese Halliburton this year. Would you have had that on your bingo card?
No.
There we go. Continuing a multi-year trend of Tyrese Halliburton blocking threes. So want to flip it in there. But no, looking more like himself. Again, seeing more of those pockets and taking those pull-ups, you'd like to see that. Obviously, if the shots are going down, you want to keep taking those. But keeping an eye on Tyrese Halliburton and the Indiana Pacers, who are still trying to find it. Can I give you a number on Jaden McDaniels?
Yes.
The number for me is 9. That is the amount of fouls that he has been called for over the last 6 games. A Jaden McDaniels who is not in foul trouble is one of the best perimeter defenders in basketball. And he's already that anyway, just from a pure skill perspective. But like, as Anthony Edwards recently talked about, like getting back to what we need to do, like Jaden's back to being who we need him to be, Rudy Gobert being who he needs him to be. He made the joke about Julius Randle perking up the defensive effort and stuff. But when Jaden McDaniels is right and ultimately on the floor for the Minnesota Timberwolves, he gets after it. Rudy Gobert, very good at the rim. Anthony Edwards, especially when he's engaged, very good on ball and off ball, particularly when he's engaged. Like, you just have that foundation of elite defense. And it's nice to see Jaden having that back. And then on the other end, timely drives. Like, going back to the Spurs game, poor Chris Paul doing his best. And it's just, well, this is just a 9-inch difference. I'm just going to attack you and just put the ball in the basket. It's kind of tough. Also, shooting 47% from three over his last 6 games. So that number probably doesn't hold, but you get the shot making, timely drives, and more importantly, the defense perking up to where we have seen it, that all defense level, without being susceptible to early foul trouble. You take that if you are the Minnesota Timberwolves. Yet another hat tip to Peyton Pritchard, who is averaging 19-6-4 in December, still has not started a game, but he has now logged 9 games with at least 30 minutes played, and he is averaging 25-5 in those games with a darn near 66 true shooting percentage. The drives are cool, but like the deep pull-up threes or the deep catch-and-shoot threes and some of the pull-up threes have just been absurd. He has just been incredibly productive, and he's been feisty defensively. He's making a very loud 6-man-of-the-year case this year. Like, it's getting kind of tough. I know we're going to talk about awards at some point soon, but Peyton Pritchard has remained very good for Boston. I think I floated this out to you on the last pod when we were doing free throws. But I would like to just salute Ayo Dosunmu in Chicago. Career highs in points and assists right now. 12.9 points, 63% on twos. Only shooting 33% from three. You want that to perk up. But 4 boards, 4.6 assists, and his turnovers are actually down from last year. Averaging 17-4-6 in December. 1.4 steals and nearly a block as well. He has scored in double digits in 8 straight games. I just like the way that he defends and the fact that he seems more comfortable inside the arc. Like, the 2-point percentage speaks for himself. But making better decisions as a passer as well. Not elite stuff, but making the right play. Getting to some pull-ups. The finishing feels a little bit better. Ayo's been hooping. And so it's been an interesting year for Chicago Bulls. But wanted to give Ayo a little bit of love. And thus concludes the player shout-outs from me. Is it YouTube comment time or did you have free throws?
We're doing both, buddy. Time to get on the block with Mekhi's Duncan.
Yes, that's more so a question of the order, to be clear. But
time for On the Block with Mekhi's Duncan, where he's going to read his top 2 YouTube comments from last week, presented to you by no one at the current moment. All right, Mekhi's, hit it, Jack.
Okay, well, the first one is a little bit indulgent on my part. Shout out to him. The Stretch Mark 4, who says, I want that CP shirt, as I was wearing a Candace Parker shirt. Very cool. Shout out, Player Society. The number one comment, however, from Michael DeCamillo, 3248, who says, it's simple. I see a new dunker spot, more like dunker's pod, am I right? And I click. Really hoping the Thursday, Friday episodes end up on YouTube someday. Also, for what it's worth, I only found the playback link because Nikias was consistently mentioning it at the end of every episode. And one day I finally took the time to click the link and check out the space. Much love, y'all.
Okay, so yes. I see what this segment is going to turn into. Okay, thank you for that. All right, let's get some free throws up, buddy. Let's get out of here. Salute,
you didn't
salute.
Like that one.
Please, no. I love it. Smash that like button. Get the comments in. We'll see if you make the Nikias cut for next week. Is Peyton Pritchard just the sixth man of the year?
It's looking like it. He's been good, man. It's been really good.
Okay. A more outrageous defensive player of the year case, Luka Doncic or Nikola Jokic?
More outrageous?
Yeah.
Oh God. This is just the who gets to yell at me question. I love that. More outrageous, probably Jokic this year. Well, I guess technically they both missed time this year. Shout out Jokic. I guess I'll go Jokic. I don't feel great about that.
Okay. Is Dyson Daniels the only challenger to Victor Wembanyama for Defensive Player of the Year?
I don't think so. I think they're still going to, like, Dyson's just all defense first team if he stays healthy. Like, we can say that. So I think it's a fair question, to be clear. I think there's absolutely going to be at least some noise for OG Anunoby, especially if the defense for the Knicks perk up over the next, like, 2-3 months. Because he's been insane pretty much all year long. So I think OG will probably get some love. This... once again, makes me feel bad for Chet. Because I think it is just him versus Wimby this year if he stayed healthy. But that brother was everywhere. And so that without that, like, I don't know if OKC has... I don't think OKC has, like, a Defensive Player of the Year candidate in earnest. Like, I think you can reasonably make a we should pay attention to, like... Oh, you can probably make a compelling one for Jalen Williams just because of literally everything he's been asked to do. And, like, some of the numbers you could get to with him, especially, like, field goal percentage at the rim, stuff like that. Like, you can build out a case. I just don't know if enough voters will actually lend itself to that for him to actually challenge Wimby. And so without Chet, like, it's probably, like, OG get in there. Evan Mobley's going to need louder numbers, unfortunately. But he's been very good as well. I think OG and Evan are probably my official names that I toss in the hat aside from Dyson Daniels right now.
Okay.
Actually, can I toss you a counter free throw on that front?
What's up?
How close is Giannis to getting into this conversation?
Bucks make a run and he does it every night. Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't be opposed. I just need to see it consistently.
Yeah. Because I was just going to say quickly, he's been wild during the stretch. Like, this is DPOY level Giannis that they've been getting. And so, if to your point, like, if the sample continues to expand, that's going to vastly outweigh, like, the beginning of the season, where he still wasn't bad, but it just wasn't A-plus Giannis. So, I dig it.
Is Karl Anthony Towns an all-star?
Should be.
Is Jalen Brunson an all-star?
He also should be. I feel like the East field is going to be really weird this year because of the players that have missed time, et cetera. Like, counter free throw. Are the Sixers going to have one?
Take a vote. But other than that, I don't think so.
Yeah, like, obviously Embiid, no. Paul George, no. And, like, Maxey has just been a weird year for him because he's had to do so much, particularly early on. And, like, they're...
Has Maxey had a better year than Cade?
I don't know if I can get there, honestly.
Has Maxey had a better year than RJ Barrett?
Not when RJ's in Toronto, I'll tell you that much. Unfortunately, there are road games, and thus.
Has Maxey had a better year than Darius Garland?
I don't think so.
Do any Tyrese's make the All-Star game?
Oh. Darn.
Flipped it.
Which, darn.
Yeah.
I think as of December 16th, the answer is probably no. There is time, but.
Boy, you wiggled your way out of that one. As of this specific moment that I am forced to answer this question, no. I'm picking up what you're putting down. Stronger coach of the year case, Doc Rivers or Jason Kidd?
Ooh. Ew. Probably Jason Kidd.
Okay. Stronger coach of the year case, Taylor Jenkins or Jason Kidd?
Surely Taylor, right? Like, the Grizzlies have been good, and they've just been like top 10 in offense and defense pretty much the entire season. Like, at a certain point, that at least gives you a foundation to build a coach of the year case.
Stronger coach of the year case, Joe Mazzulla or Taylor Jenkins?
Oh, now why did you do that to me? Oh. I'll go Jenkins.
Okay. More likely to be traded, D'Angelo Russell or Jonas Valanciunas?
Is the answer just yes? Because they just end up traded for each other. But no, I would say more likely is probably JV. Okay. He just took like the mid level exception in Washington, right? It feels like a very tradable deal, and there would be enough good teams that could use a center. I'll say JV.
More likely to stay with their current team, Brandon Ingram or Jeremy Grant?
I'm going to say the answer is, I want to say the answer is Jeremy Grant, which very quickly, it's like cozy up in the gaming chair here. The report that Portland has like dropped their price to a first round pick and also a promising young player, as if that probably just isn't the absolute ceiling of what a Jeremy Grant offer would be. And Jeremy Grant hasn't been like a level Jeremy Grant this year either. Like, it's kind of tough. It's a tad bit tough. I don't know what the price is going to end up being for Mr. Grant. I don't think it's going to be that though. I think there's going to be another drop before we get a deal done on that front. If wow. I had to guess, I don't have sources, but like,
didn't need sources to take Jeremy Grant out now, did you, buddy? Goodness gracious.
I'm just saying, it's just steep for, like, he's been good, but not great. And the contract is kind of tough. So, like, getting first and also young guy we believe in, like, that feels like a lot.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to pivot us out of here. So, speaking of a lot, did you know the Pop-Tarts Bowl trophy? You can actually make Pop-Tarts in it.
Oh, that's kind of crazy.
All right, hit the horns.
Okay, well, on that note, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And naturally, every Tuesday, the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday, we are on this here YouTube channel. So if you have not smashed that like button and or subscribed, you should go ahead and do that. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Nikias NBA. Steve allegedly has an account, but we can't say what that account is. Okay, well, there you go. You have heard from the man himself. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link is in the podcast description. If you have League Pass, you can watch Hoops live with us. We're sprinkling in some play breakdowns and things. We have some fun basketball questions, some poll questions in there. A lot of video game antics. We are in the offseason of the Dunker Dynasty in College Football 25. Your Charlotte 49ers have won a national championship, so that's cool.
Oh my God, bro!
Anyway, click the link, create your profiles, free to do so. You can come hang with us. We let the hair that we don't have, we let that down, apparently. Anyway, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Are you trying to call me bald? What's good? No, see me.